honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our chance to listen to Leroy Petrie, one of just 65 living recipients of the Medal of Honor. His was earned 15 years ago this next week on May 26, 2008, in Afghanistan while serving with the 75th Ranger Regiment. We heard him describe that moment when he made the split-second decision to pick up an enemy grenade and throw it away. The blast occurred right as he released it, costing him his hand but saving the lives of his fellow Rangers. And when we left off, the severely wounded Petrie had somehow made it to the casualty collection point.
And at that point, we walk in and the medics are treating guys and you see blood everywhere. For me, it was the first chance I got to take a breath. I mean, the adrenaline and everything running. And the doc, one of our medics, comes walking up to me and says, "Petrie, we need to treat you." And I said, "I'm good. I already got a tourniquet on this thing. I stopped the bleeding, helped those guys." And he said, "Well, we got to take a look at your legs." I completely forgot about my legs. And I thought I was only shot in the left thigh. It ended up being both thighs. And so I looked down at my pants and they're soaked in blood, all the way to my boots. Mentally, I wanted to stay in the fight, but physically, I knew I was running out of juice. And my idea was that even if I used my last breath to give a radio call that could help my guys, that's what I wanted to do. But I knew I wasn't helping anybody by bleeding out. So I sat down and I let them cut off my pants and they put me in a litter. And as they started to carry me out to our helicopter landing zone where helicopter was going to come in for medevac, guys are running up to me and they're, "Hey, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. We're going to get them for you." And I'm pushing them away with one good arm I have. "Get out of here. Go pull security." Because, I mean, we're still in a combat zone and there's still sporadic fire here and there. And my big fear is that they're going to get shot coming to comfort me. And I never lost that leader mentality of looking out for my guys. And which is worse, I might get shot where I can't defend myself in this litter. Then I'm really going to be angry. But we get up to the aircraft. The aircraft lands, and they start loading us up. And even Sergeant Higgins next to me, he's leaning down, and he's like, "You saved us. You saved us." I was like, "Great, get on the bird." I'm thinking big target, still thinking about their safety and everyone's safety. And at that point, they took us back to our forward operating base, Sharana, which is a dirt airfield. Dumped us on the side of this dirt airfield, all the casualties, and then the helicopter took back off to support the mission. And I think it was probably about 30 minutes later, they had a fixed-wing aircraft come in and pick us up. It was the J. Mao bird, which is basically like you could do open-heart surgery in the back of this plane. And at that point, I was like, oh. And I had two PAs that were working on all of us casualties there that were organic and who I'd known since I had pretty much joined the Rangers. Several years before, and I felt a little at ease. Get on the aircraft, they load us on there with the litter, and probably about 30 more minutes, and they heavily sedated me. And next thing I remember is waking up in Germany. Germany was interesting. I wake up the next day in Germany, and the nurse is in my room, and she says, "Oh, you're awake? Can I get you anything?" I said, "Yeah. Can you get me a razor and some shaving cream?" She kind of does this double take, and she goes, "Excuse me?" I said, "Can you give me a razor and some shaving cream?" And she looked at me like I was nuts, but in my mind, that discipline of being in the Rangers was still at the front, where I was more worried about a colonel or somebody coming in not from my unit and seeing Leroy unshaven. Nobody would have cared in the condition I was in. I was pretty mangled, but that was our standards. In our blue book was Rangers will shave every single day to include weekends, holidays, at home, whatever. And so I learned how to shave left-handed that first day, but I also got a chance to call my wife, and I knew she was going to be an emotional wreck. At this time, it's Memorial Day back home. And my mother-in-law would come in sometimes to help with the kids, and they were both in their nightgown. It was early in the morning, and they got the knock at the door. And they'll come in fatigues, field uniform if you're injured, and dress uniform if you're killed in action. And she walks over to the door, and she looks through the peephole, and she doesn't even look at the uniform. She just sees the tan Ranger beret, and she backs away from the door, and she said, "Mom, you're going to have to send the kids upstairs. You're going to have to get the door." And I knew all this was going to happen. And so I'm trying to think, when I call her, what I can tell her that'll put her mind at ease that I'm in good spirits and I'm doing okay. And so I call her and I said, "Honey, I'm in Germany. I got shot through both my legs, upper thighs, and I lost my hand right about the wrist." Phone goes dead silent. So, of course, the hamster on the wheel upstairs starts running as fast as it can to come up with something good to tell her. And I said, "The good news is the junk's still there." And she's like, "All right, he's all right. He's going to be okay. If he's joking, he's in good spirits." But that's the only way I could let her know that I was doing okay.
Wow. Well, I got a lot of questions. Some of them may be more on the dumb side than others, but they were basic anyway. I'm sure you've considered this. What would have happened if you didn't pick that grenade up and throw it back?
Well, the kill radius is usually 5 meters, so chances are we'd all be dead.
How many guys is that?
Definitely the two next to me, but there was a couple others as well nearby.
And yourself?
And myself, yeah.
In that moment, how does that thought process work? Are you thinking at all? Are you just reacting?
It had always been foremost in my mind that I looked at those guys like they were my brothers, like they were my children, and I would have done the same for them. I do want to share a picture with you real quick.
Yeah.
Artist did a rendition of the action, and he did a painting. This is a picture of the print, and it doesn't do it justice. The actual oil painting's hanging at my unit, and it's pretty amazing. So that was me laying on the ground with bloody legs,
mm-hmm.
with the grenade. But
wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Most of us will never be in that situation, and anybody watching or listening to this is likely never going to be in that situation. But I think people imagine themselves in it, and they have to ask themselves the question, what would I have done? What do you think it was that motivated you to act the way you did?
I know exactly what it was. It's a thing we don't talk about in the military that often, definitely not in the Rangers unless we're talking about beer and chasing women, but love. It was love for a fellow soldier and responsibility. With leadership comes responsibility. And my biggest fear, people ask me, "Were you ever afraid?" I said, "Yeah, I was afraid every single day. I wasn't afraid of dying. I made my peace with God and I said goodbye to my family. I knew it was the last time I could see them." And I accepted that. But what I was afraid of was I would miss an IED in the road. I'd miss a shooter in a window. I'd miss the opportunity to train my guys on something that could have saved their life. And what I feared was having to come home and hand that folded flag to a mother, a daughter, a brother, a sister, a husband, a father, you name it. And what I did, though, was I turned that fear into awareness. I made sure I didn't get complacent and my guys didn't get complacent, even though we'd been down the same road 100 times. I took the opportunity to train them on things, that tasks that we hadn't been given, just so that they were more prepared. And I never lost sight of my job was to bring them home alive. Now, war is hell and you can't control everything. And I wanted to know, though, that at the end of the day, if I had to hand a folded flag to someone, that I did my best to bring their son or daughter alive, home alive. And so that's the way I looked at them, and it's instinctive to care for them.
You know, I've heard a lot of stories from a lot of veterans about themselves being wounded or even just others around them being wounded or killed. And quite frequently, there's a shock that sets in. And at times, guys are paralyzed in the moment. You know, they can't act or they can't think straight. I mean, were you in pain? Did you feel anything?
I never felt any pain. It wasn't until I got to Andrews Air Force Base, like 2 or 3 days later, that I felt my first ounce of pain. Like I said, the adrenaline's going high, and your focus is on your guys, so the focus never came to me. I grew up landlocked, New Mexico, and we had our Medal of Honor convention in Hawaii in 13, and I ran off into the beach, excited about the ocean, and I stepped on something. I had no idea what it was, and I'm like, and get back. My son helps me get back to the room because I was cutting myself up on the coral. I knew what coral was, but so I looked at the bottom of my foot, and there's just like black ink and these like brittle straw-looking fingers sticking out, and I tried to grab one, and it fall apart, and I was like, what the heck is this? So I'll call the front desk, and the nurse, they're sending a nurse out with a kit, and I realize there's a pamphlet next to the phone, so I start reading it. It's talking about sea urchins. I had no idea what a sea urchin was, and I stepped on one, and it hurt. And so my daughter, who was younger at that time, I think she was like 13, she's looking at me, and I'm whining about this sea urchin on the bottom of my foot. She goes, Dad, you said it didn't hurt when you blew off your hand, you got shot through both your legs. Now you're sitting here crying about that? I said, no one's shooting at me. I'm just looking at it going, ow. I said, it hurts more when that's your focus. But the brain is a very amazing organ. Your body will do more than you ever thought it could possibly do. It's usually the brain that'll tell it to quit and stop before it will. Mm-hmm. Same reason most time people go to the doctor. Feel fine until the doctor tells them they have something. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh my gosh, I got this or that. Oh my gosh. Actually got me in trouble with my doctor. I didn't see him in like 2 years, and he said, Leroy, we need to see you more often. I said, nothing's been wrong. And he says, yeah, I'd still like to see you every 6 months or so. And I said, if all the people that were healthy and felt good came to see you, when would you have time to see the sick people? He says, all right. And I said, I'm just joking. I'll come see you. I'll check in.
Well, you know, I've got to ask you too, because you mentioned Memorial Day. This whole story centers around Memorial Day. That's what time of year it was. And you came really close to being one of those who we remember on Memorial Day. But you're also carrying another aspect of that price of freedom, because you know there are wounds that we can see, and there are those that we can't see. Can you help us understand how this has changed your life, just on an everyday perspective?
Being injured really changed my life, because you realize that you're dependent on other people. Like I said, we were alpha males, rangers. Didn't really talk to people if you weren't in our community. And when I was at the hospital going through recovery, the first person to come visit me in San Antonio before my family could show up was this young female who, she was EOD, and she was in Iraq, and she was going to grab some homemade explosives that they found that was falling, and it blew up, and it took both of her arms off above the elbow. And she's standing by my bed, and she's telling me what to expect, and she's smiling and having a good time, and I'm like, I got one good arm. I got nothing to complain about. This girl, females have, I mean, they got so much to do, and she's young, but that was the thing. I saw other inspiring service members there as well as I got outpatient, and you realize you're not alone, that somebody else has gone through something tougher than you have, that you could get through it, which you can. But if you do it by yourself, it's going to be harder. And I realized I needed help with things, and I wasn't afraid to ask for it. And so even when I'd get dressed in my dress uniform, when I was on the road and my wife or somebody wasn't with me, I'd have to find the cleaning lady out in the hall. Hey, can you unbutton this for me? Can you do my cufflink for me? Yeah. It brought some humility, but it also brought awareness that there's a lot of folks that didn't get that one more second to do anything in this world, with their family, by themselves, anything. And makes you grateful for every second that you do have. I just look at that and I say, you know, I've been blessed with this opportunity, and I'm lucky I get to do it, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. You know, I think about the men and women who we've lost, the families that have suffered that loss, that we'll never get them back, and I welcome them as family, as the Gold Star families. But I also think about this last year I texted him, a gentleman I had the opportunity to meet, Howard Schultz. And what he said to me when we were first met that really stuck with me is, I can do more. And so I always look at an opportunity to do more, that when you're dead, you can't do any more. While you're alive, you have the opportunity to do so much. And I try not to take it for granted.
And is there anything you want to say about your organization and what the purpose behind it is?
Congressional Medal of Honor Society is built up of now 66 living recipients, but taking care of the recipients and their welfare, also our programs of character development program, which is educational piece that's developed with teachers to use in schools to teach about the pillars and values that we hold dear, citizenship, patriotism, courage, a lot of those things, but also to reach out to our veterans and support them, talk to them about depression and suicide prevention and resiliency, and to have the courage to ask for help, but also to give help if it's needed. One of the things that I noticed in the military is that every branch kind of missed the big value. They got leadership, loyalty, duty, respect, honor, courage, selfless service and personal courage, whatever. My number one is probably the honesty. They missed that. And honesty with yourself and with others. That is probably the most freedom you'll ever have. The Army says integrity, but it's easy to do the right thing when no one's around. It's harder to tell something to somebody that they don't want to hear. It's also harder for you to admit something that you don't want to share with others. And so having that honesty is one of the most important qualities someone can have.
Powerful perspective from Medal of Honor recipient Leroy Petrie, and what a privilege to share his story with you today. Leroy remains involved with the Congressional Medal of Honor Society, which I have linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Next week, we're going to get back to our usual genre of World War II veteran stories with a special Memorial Day twist. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.